Governor Holcomb unveils his 2021 agenda, recommendations from the Teacher Compensation Commission, plus Pete Buttigieg for Transportation Secretary, and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending December 18th, 2020.
Indiana Week in Review is made possible by the supporters of Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations and by Ice Miller. Ice Miller is a full-service law firm committed to helping clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
This week, Governor Eric Holcomb unveiled his agenda for 2021, one which focuses more on studying, assessing, and extending previously announced initiatives than taking new actions. He does propose increased funding to K-12 schools and restoring higher education budgets. Holcomb's push to increase K-12 funding and restore higher ed comes after a new revenue forecast projects little to no new money in the next state budget. Holcomb says further federal relief dollars will be vital to helping make his state budget proposals possible.
These are our priorities, and if we're able, this is what we will deliver.
Holcomb pushed back on the idea that the bulk of his agenda isn't new initiatives.
To say, well, there's not a lot of new, this is what we need to do to continue to stay on the road that we're on to grow.
Holcomb also hopes to secure workplace accommodations for pregnant workers, a push that failed last year, and further expand the state's broadband program, though he's not asking for more money for that effort. Does Governor Holcomb's 2021 agenda adequately meet the moment? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwanes, host of Indiana Lawmakers, and Nikki Kelly, State House reporter for the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. I'm Indiana Public Broadcasting State House reporter Brandon Smith. Ann Delaney, Holcomb says his agenda is what Indiana needs to do to stay on the road it's on and grow. Is he right?
Oh, of course he's not right. I mean, to say that this agenda is modest in a time of crisis is too kind. I mean, it has no initiative in there. And keeping the school funding, all you're saying is, okay, so the teachers will be $10,000 below all their contemporaries in adjoining states instead of $11,000 down. I mean, he's not doing anything in terms of improving or hoping to improve the growth of the state. As some of the reports have shown, the only job growth had been in these low-paying jobs. He isn't doing anything to invest in people, and that's what's essential if we're going to have growth in Indiana. And he's just not doing it. I don't know whether he doesn't have the, quote, vision thing, or he just is so cautious that he's afraid of his own shadow, but he's certainly not doing anything to help Indiana grow and be an attractive place to live and work.
Mike O'Brien, the question I started with was whether the agenda meets the moment, which is certainly different than any that has come before it for a very long time at the very least. Does this agenda really meet this extraordinary moment we're in?
I think there's two things. You know, we always get knocked for rehashing some of the same old agenda items, but it's because you can't build I-69 in 3 months. It takes 15 years to do it, and you have to plan it every step of the way. So it's always a part of the agenda until it's finished, as an example. I think this agenda also positions or tries to anticipate what life after COVID is going to look like, during the next 6 months as well. So expand telehealth services as an example of that, so people don't have to go into the doctor. But looking beyond COVID, he announced a reform to the state's long-term care system, which clearly needs it and clearly needs attention, which it hasn't had in years because the legislature has had a moratorium in place to protect that industry for a long time, and he's signaled that that's coming to an end, and reforms are coming. So those are those are two very specific things that he's done, that he's doing, and will do in response to COVID. While we continue on a day in day out, while the administration on a day in day out basis continues to manage the crisis, I think the legislature generally is going to be looking at a lot of reforms in state law in response to COVID and try to anticipate what business looks like after, and clear some roadblocks for that as well. And he's a part of that effort too.
I'm glad that he's finally recognized the issue of nursing homes, because when he first came into office and the proposal had been made for 25% of the additional Medicaid money to go to nursing homes for safety, for training, for paying the workers, he said no. So part of the responsibility for the total failure of the nursing homes and the number of deaths we've had in nursing homes rests squarely on his shoulders. I'm glad he's finally come around to the need. He should have done it when he first came in 4 years ago. We wouldn't be in this position.
John Schwanes, a reaction to this agenda that struck me was Senator Greg Taylor's, the Senate Minority Leader, who said, if you didn't know we were in the middle of a pandemic, you wouldn't know it by looking at Governor Holcomb's agenda. Do you think that's fair?
Not necessarily entirely. I think it's a budget that takes into account the fact that we are in uncertain times budgetarily, and that it will affect our priorities in the coming session. You know, in the past, when the governor has rolled out his agenda for the legislature, he has typically billed it as the next level, moving to the next level. And I think this is more an instance of leveling off or trying to stay at the same level, which, again, given what the state has been through, given what all 50 states have been through because of COVID-19, is probably about as good as one can expect realistically. So I think, you know, we don't know how this story ends yet. Yes, we're seeing vaccinations. Yes, maybe there is light at the end of the tunnel. But a lot can happen. Well, as you often say, in an Indiana week, a lot can happen between now and the end of the session. And I doubt that everything is on the table. I'm sure that he will show leadership and move the state, perhaps in other ways that are more targeting growth once he sees what the situation is in terms of revenue and in terms of the recovery from
pandemic. Nikki, it was mentioned as the governor rolled out his agenda that legislators have been sending out the message to their members, legislative leaders, that, hey, we are not going to be able to get as many bills through this session because of how different this session is going to look, I mean, from a logistical standpoint because of COVID-19. Do you think that's somewhat reflected in Governor Holcomb's agenda, too, the acknowledgement that this cannot be a normal session in terms of the normal output of legislation?
A little bit. He puts out an agenda that's both administrative and legislative, which I think is different from previous governors. So there's a lot on there that can be handled administratively, and then some that will actually need to go through the legislature. One that obviously Mike picked up on and Ann about the long-term care, I think that could be a fascinating thing. Unfortunately, it was literally one line and with no specifics on how or what changes would be made. So a lot of this, you know, we need to see bills. So I kind of saw these as very high level goals, not necessarily specifics for legislation.
Yeah. All right. Well, the governor's Teacher Compensation Commission unveiled its report on teacher pay this week, including a list of more than 30 recommendations to raise educator salaries. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Jeannie Lindsay explains the recommendations are designed for lawmakers and local schools to consider.
The commission's report says a competitive average teacher salary for Indiana lands at about $60,000 a year. That's nearly $9,000 more than the current average and would take an investment of more than $600 million. Commission Chairman Mike Smith says elected officials, schools, and education groups all have a role to play.
It's a daunting task, and it's going to require action and cooperation by all of us.
The commission recommends lawmakers consider things like a minimum teacher salary and paying off even more pension debt to free up additional funding. The group also recommends schools join the state's prescription purchasing plan and pursue referendum funding to increase their revenue.
Mike O'Brien, given the current budget realities, which we will talk more about the budget in a little while, but how much of this whole of these recommendations are reasonable to expect?
If you set aside the $600 million, I don't think it's unreasonable to expect that they could do all or most of that. And they've already, for example, paying down pension obligations to free up more dollars in the system, they've already done once. But considering the money, the problem with, you know, in the last biennium, this legislature put $800 million more dollars in K-12 education. The problem with this, it continues, the structural problem continues, that the legislature doesn't decide and the governor doesn't decide how much teachers are paid. That money flows down to the local level, it is managed at the local level, and it's collectively bargained at the local level. So I'll give you the biggest example we have in the last 15 years, when we got serious about property tax reform and we were serious about reducing local property taxes, the state took it over. I don't see how we're ever gonna control the decisions that are made with that K-12 dollar unless the legislature takes over the decision of teacher pay. Now, you can go set a statutory limit on an average, set a starting salary. Those school districts are still going to be pressed to come under that mandate with the amount of money that they're given. So without some kind of structural change on who's actually in charge of this decision, I don't see how you get to a number that's satisfactory for anybody.
And Delaney, is that exactly the point, that the legislature hasn't, while it's taken over the responsibility of giving the money to schools, it has not taken over the responsibility of figuring out exactly how those dollars are spent at the local level? Without that, is this always going to be an issue?
There are lots of ways to do it. One way, of course, is to have the state do it. Another way is to give the local school districts incentive and the money to make those changes. You know, the state legislature.
We tried that last session.
Well, the state legislature has decided that we need 274 school districts, for example, some of them with as few as 1,000 students. When you talk about economy, you know, that is absurd. And then in addition, when you talk about the more money that's going into education, it's not going in to the 93% of the students who are in traditional public education. It's going to vouchers. It's going to charter schools. And it's going to those virtual schools that wasted so much money 2 years ago. So you've got all of that that's the legislature and the governor's fault. But in addition to that, the state is not a bank. The reason we have a surplus is to even out the crisis years. This is a crisis year. And we've asked the teachers to wait until 2021 when we could have done something before and we didn't. We can't ask them to wait two more years. There are ways to do this. And if we had leadership from the governor's office, they could be done. But it is ridiculous to say that we have to have a $2.2 billion surplus, which is not there just so that we can look at it and salute it. It's there to help us in precisely these times. If we took away the silly little income tax cut that Mike Pence put in as a running ploy and stopped or even paused the corporate tax, we would have enough to have that $600 million. And the question is, do we have the will to do what's right? And the answer is apparently from the Republicans, no.
You could spend every dollar of that surplus on teacher pay and you run out in year three. So I don't know what you do in year four.
Yeah, but you know what happens in the meanwhile, Mike, is that the economy then begins to grow.
We're going to talk a little bit more about the budget, including how lawmakers might, or how the state might use that surplus in the next segment or in a couple segments. But Nikki Kelly, to that end, as you look at these recommendations, how much do you think is realistic for the legislature to be doing in 2021?
Look, there are some, you know, relatively simple recommendations in there that they could do pretty quickly, but those aren't the ones that, you know, actually pack a punch with large fiscal dollars. The ones that do, such as not having teacher spouses on their healthcare plans or gutting the 529 tax credit, those are going to be more controversial, but those are the ones that actually would bring funding to the table. So I doubt we will see much movement on this report this year. You know, obviously COVID has, you know, affected our revenue and also just the time that we have to do things. It's really a shame though for the teachers who were told the last 2 years, just let us get to the next budget and we'll take care of you.
To that point, John Schwanes, that's Nikki's exactly right. Teachers were told, we're doing this big commission. They will come out with these recommendations. We will then take that in a budget year to the legislature and say, okay, let's figure out the plan. Everything up to that last point has been done. Can lawmakers, in a sense, get away with saying to teachers, well, we were going to do it, but COVID, will that be acceptable to teachers?
Well, whether or not it's acceptable to teachers, it may just be the reality. Those are the cards that the budgetary cards that may be dealt to the state. So they may have to, accept it and live with it and hope for a stronger recovery that leads to more money in the future. And I don't think teachers are going to be unreasonable. I think they realize that the state is in a bit of a pinch, as is the rest of the country. And I think if there is some movement in the right direction, if it is made a priority vis-a-vis other state budgetary items, they'll see that, yeah, we're appreciated. There is an effort to recognize our hard work. We still are coming out, and maybe we didn't get the percentage increase we would have hoped for, but we look around and we look at other type, you know, components of state government that are getting far less, and they may say, we can live with that. But again, I don't see why we're not going to have the wholesale change. You know, Ann talks about school consolidation. This is not the session that those types of things will take place. Even if arguably they would save money in the end, that is not something that lawmakers want to bite off. At this point.
Well, time now for viewer feedback. Each week, we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice-Miller email and text alerts. This week's question, will the General Assembly enact recommendations from the Teacher Compensation Commission? A, most of them. B, some of them. C, few of them. Or D, no, they won't. Last week's question, we asked you if Joe Biden will be the next president of the United States. 91% of you said yes, and 9% of you live in an alternate reality. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to wfyi.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Well, President-elect Joe Biden announced this week he wants former South Bend mayor and presidential candidate Pete Buttigieg to lead the U.S. Department of Transportation. Biden called Buttigieg a new voice with new ideas as he announced the Hoosier Democrat as his pick for transportation secretary. The president-elect said transportation will be at the intersection of his administration's plans to help the nation recover from the economic downturn caused by COVID-19. Both Biden and Buttigieg also noted the historical significance of the pick. If confirmed, Buttigieg would be the first openly gay cabinet secretary. Buttigieg recalled as a 17-year-old seeing the news that one of then-President Bill Clinton's intended nominees was denied a Senate vote because he was gay.
So 2 decades later, I can't help but think of a 17-year-old somewhere who might be watching us right now. Somebody who wonders whether and where they belong in the world or even in their own family. And I'm thinking about the message that today's announcement is sending to them.
Buttigieg also expressed a personal love of transportation and said America should lead the way in building roads, railways, and transit systems. John Schwanes, is this a good fit for the future we all assume Buttigieg wants for himself?
Well, no shortage of jokes this week about his qualifications as it relates specifically to transportation. I know, CNN talked about the 47 buses that he oversaw as mayor of South Bend. People talked about the rail line and, Chicago commuting. Is that really the kind of background for somebody who's going to run these types of things on a national level? And Fox even did a thing on his pothole problem as mayor. All of that, I think, is sort of just not really applicable to the task at hand. This is a job that, at least in the Biden administration, I think will be high profile. Because of the emphasis that will be placed on infrastructure improvement, not only as a means of sort of driving us to the future in terms of distribution, logistics, and manufacturing and distribution, but also as a stimulus of sorts for the economy, infrastructure improvements that would in fact create jobs and pump more money into the economy. So he's a quick learner. He probably has the highest IQ of anybody in the administration. I mean, what did he taught himself whatever language it was because he wanted to read some poem in the language. I'm sure he could learn a few things about, truck weights and the asphalt components of good asphalt. So I think it may not be what he wanted going into this process, but I'm sure he can make hay with it.
Yeah, to that point, Nikki Kelly, there were a few different things bandied about that potentially for Pete Buttigieg. The VA ambassador to China came up recently before this announcement. Do you think if Pete Buttigieg could have picked a job other than, of course, president or vice president, he would have picked this one?
Probably not. I mean, I'm sure he would have maybe moved a little differently. But, I mean, I think he'll dig into it. He's shown that. And one thing he does know, he might not know all the details, but one thing he does know as a former mayor is that, your roads partially control your growth of your community and, help that continue. So I think that's a segment that he could maybe latch onto and try to make it his own.
Ann Delaney, John Schwanes mentioned the idea that in the Biden administration specifically, that the Secretary of Transportation will likely be a high-profile figure. Do you think that it will be high-profile enough for the future that Pete Buttigieg wants?
Oh, I think so, and I think this is exactly the job he would have picked, because it isn't only about transportation, it's also about climate change. And he is very well qualified to talk about both. I mean, he's being chosen from the state which bills itself as the crossroads of America. I think it's an excellent choice for Joe Biden, and I think it really makes a difference for Pete Buttigieg and for the state of Indiana, and I couldn't be more delighted. I don't know why you'd want to be ambassador to China. And the VA was obvious because he was the only veteran that was at the end of the presidential contest. But I think the VA is mostly an administrative job. This one sets policy, and this is what Pete Buttigieg is interested in, policy. And I think that's why it's such a good fit.
Michael Bryan, I've asked the other panelists if this is a good job for Pete Buttigieg himself in the future. Is Pete Buttigieg a good choice for transportation secretary?
First, I think it's always good when you have a Hoosier in a senior position in Washington, D.C. It's good for Indiana, and we've proven ourselves to be pretty capable people, I think, when put in those positions through history and both sides of the aisle. I think he's a pretty competent guy, just generally. I do think you don't need to be an expert in transportation policy to do this job. I mean, it's as much administrative and running a huge agency and an important agency as it is understanding, you know, the policies that are moving through it, the projects that are moving through it. You can always hire, you can hire all the engineers in the world to build a road, but you need someone who knows how to run the agency too. And I think he's a pretty competent guy in general. I think he'll do fine.
All right. Well, there will likely be little to no new money for schools, state programs, and agencies in the next Indiana state budget. Lawmakers predict a flat line in the budget's first year after the latest revenue forecast. The new forecast projects Indiana will have about $360 million in increased revenue over the next two-year state budget compared to the current budget. That would be a boost of barely 1%. And new Medicaid costs will likely eclipse that increase. Republican Senator Ryan Mishler says that means the next budget will have to be cautious.
It is basically a flat line the first year. So we'll have to be very careful the first year. The second year, if the economy continues to grow like they're anticipating, we could have more revenue to work with.
The budget won't be finalized until at least late April, and state fiscal leaders agree that a lot can change before then. That includes potential new federal COVID-19 relief dollars and the impact of the COVID vaccine on the economy. Nikki Kelly, how did lawmakers and the governor characterize their reaction to the forecast?
I think they were actually pretty surprised that it was more positive than they had expected. Revenues seem to be picking up. The first year is definitely going to be tough, but luckily I think you only have to balance the budget the second year here in Indiana. So if they can maybe get through with some maneuvers the first year, the second year could even out. If I were schools, though, I would probably expect a flat line. And then if they get any increase, it's sort of a bonus.
If you're anyone other than Indiana schools, John Schwanes, are you pleasantly surprised at the idea that you might just get the same amount of money in the next state budget you had in the current one?
Pleasantly surprised in the manner you might be if you dodge the proverbial bullet. I think people were bracing for worse news, for an even bleaker outlook. So I think I don't want to say anybody's jumping for joy, but I think people, again, this shouldn't be a surprise to anybody in any realm or any endeavor. So I think people will realize, you know, and we talked so much about K through 12, and you did allude earlier on to trying to restore funding to higher ed. But I do think higher ed, if anybody's sitting pretty in the wake of COVID-19, it probably is a higher ed because of the argument that it collectively can craft about trying to gird for, do the kinds of research and build the kinds of competencies and research capacities that will gird the state for the inevitable future pandemic and other challenges. So
quickly,
they probably have a pretty compelling argument to make.
Quickly, Mike O'Brien, how creative will lawmakers end up getting in that first year of the new budget using some of what looks to be a still substantial reserve?
The governor has the power to augment those budgets, and he's managed state government through this crisis by making sure the budget was balanced. I mean, look, the reality is we look around the country, and the latest analysis has about a $450 billion budget shortfall in states, and Indiana's is next to almost zero. And that's just a result of good management and good policymaking by the legislature.
And Delaney, finally, quickly, is this better than a lot of people would have hoped for?
I think it may be. And I was very encouraged by Tim Brown's observation that the budget surplus doesn't have to be at $2.2 billion right now. And if they use some of that money wisely, they can protect schools and protect higher education and raise teacher salaries. And, you know, again, there are ways they can do this if education in the next generation is a priority.
Well, I think it is. That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwanis of Indiana Lawmakers, and Nikki Kelly of the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/IWIR, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity and on the WFYI app. I'm Brandon Smith of Indiana Public Broadcasting. Join us next time, because a lot can happen in an Indiana week.
Indiana Week in Review is made possible by the supporters of Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations and by Ice Miller. Ice Miller is a full-service law firm committed to helping clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com. The opinions expressed are solely those of the panelists. Indiana Week in Review is a WFYI production in association with Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations.